Right now, Roy McBeany, John Avery, Leah Visser, and Diana Cirny to join me at this table. I'm forcing Diana against her will to sit next to me. and the simple reason is that she's been part of a network, a virtual network, for quite some time now. By accident, initially, I should say, but then she turned out to be a very useful resource in our thinking about this project that was initiated by Roy. So I'll ask Roy to quickly summarize actually what this is about, and then the nature of the session, I think, will best be that we enter into some sort of dialogue among ourselves and the rest of the audience on the what makes sense in the ideas that we have, and perhaps what does not make sense and how things could be linked up to other people's experiences. Roy?
Well, let me just say, first of all, how much I'm in agreement with what's been said so far about lifelong learning. I'm very enthusiastic about this concept. I've had my nose down for the actual production of material for distribution on the internet going back 2 or 3 years, and I've already produced 2 books and 2 more in the advanced stages of preparation. John Avery has joined in with an appendix to, or an addendum to, book 3 with some overlap and the more historical bias. But I'd like to say, or to hazard a guess at some of the reasons for this general turning off of enthusiasm for science among young people, I think there are 2 root causes. One is the symbolism, because a lot of science nowadays, particularly, is increasingly symbolic. You only have to think of, well, in any field, not only the physical sciences, but Boolean methods, logic, everything. It all depends, comes down to symbols in the end, that is, to mathematical thinking. And young people don't like that, probably because they haven't started early enough at school trying to come to grips with these rather offbeat concepts. The other thing that turns them off, perhaps, it's already been touched upon, is simply that science is no longer seen as a creative and cultural activity. It's not sufficiently challenging, and so we're turning to other fields. Now, in a world where the progress of humanity is increasingly dependent on science and science-based developments, this is just no longer acceptable. What we want to do is bring an understanding of science and its symbolism within the reach of everyone. And that's the primary aim of the workbooks. I should say that there's a big difference here. It depends on what society you are aiming at. And these books are really aimed at young people without the advantages that we have as young people. Young people who may not even have access to schools. And so there's a heavy stress on the use of the internet. The books will all be given away free, so that anybody with a computer and a telephone line can download this material. And as you see from all of the books, they're simple documents of usually between, say, 50 and 150 pages, covering a well-defined theme. Let me just mention a few. The first one is number and symbols, which goes from counting to abstract algebras. So you start with counting, arithmetic first of all, of course, and the idea of the basic operations, addition, multiplication, and their inverses, subtraction, division, that kind of thing. and then pass over to the use of letters of the alphabet as symbols standing for numbers, and you go into elements of algebra at the lowest level. And then, well, there isn't time to go through the details, but these books are available for inspection, and there's a handout and some material of more detailed form on the structure of the books. The second book comes to the next big hurdle, dealing with space, and it's got the subtitle From Euclid to Einstein, because the further you go in talking about space, the less adequate the Euclidean formalism is. You should turn to the metric, and this leads eventually on even to curved spaces. You can think of sailing ships around the Earth. Many things were known to the ancient mariners about curved space, and that comes at the end of book two. By the end of book two, you've actually got to Einstein. You can get the Lorentz transformation and so on, and you've only used two or three things: counting, measuring distances, and these simple kinematical ideas. Book three is on relationships and change. This is the original scheme. John has extended into calculus and differential equations. The idea is that at this point we can use the background from the earlier books on number and space and go on to rates of change and the elements of mathematical analysis. Book four, we start moving to physics, talking about mass and motion, first steps in the physics. And the number of principles one needs is very small. This is really a creative activity of the mind to make use of the simple observed facts, like Galileo's experiments with falling bodies, they all fall at the same rate. And on that basis, you can start to tackle ideas like force. You can do it all in terms of everyday activities, like pushing barrels and lifting weights and so on. And you have to do it all at a level that can be understood by teenagers, possibly whose first language is not English, so you have to write in simplest English you can master. And of course, one hopes that in due course there will be translations into other languages, particularly perhaps Spanish and Arabic. I've been exploring those possibilities, but so far without success. It's a matter of finding people who are willing to assist in projects of this kind, and also finding people who have their fingers on the communication aspects of the business, promotion, and getting material to the right places.
It's all the time that I would advise that we spend talking to you, and I'd like to open a discussion. It's given you an idea of what this is about, and let me just briefly introduce the other people behind the table. It's John Avery from the Ørsted Institute in Copenhagen, Dia Visser from Learning Development Institute, who's a specialist in distance education. You recognize that many of the learning that will be based on those books will be done at a distance from the author and from other facilitators. And there's Diana Sterling, whom you have met before, who is an Tucson, Arizona-based painter and person interested in many other things, including science, and who has been advising us on flexible curriculum design. John, do you want to add something?
I would like to add the website of the Learning Development Institute under a heading called For the Love of Science. They're also on another location, Power Center in Italy. But I think everyone here has the address of the Learning Development Institute. Also, I would like to say that Roy is recruiting authors. he's done a great, a fantastic job single-handedly in beginning this project, but we envision about 40 of these workbooks. Therefore, we need other people who are motivated by enthusiasm for the idea of giving free textbooks to young people in the developing world. Or to people in Europe and North America and Japan who may have missed science at an early stage of their career, but turn to it again, motivated by curiosity, and who would like to learn something about it. So this series is aimed at beginning almost from zero. It's aimed at an age group of 14 to 19. So we do not assume very much prior knowledge of mathematics or science beyond just being able to count and multiply and divide and so on. We begin from a very low starting point, and the idea is in the books in the simplest way as possible to reach a level that will prepare students for entry to a science course at at university level. That is, bring the more advanced parts of the workbooks will try to prepare people for university, and will therefore correspond to gymnasium in Europe. I also would like to say that I strongly believe myself that the historical method is very well suited for this kind of book because it makes the subject more human. And I believe, too, that young people need models, and the lives of the great scientists are very inspiring in that respect. Also, if we're aiming at the developing world, it's nice to include some of the contributions to science that have come from the developing world.
Let's try to get some reactions from the public. What are your thoughts, Peter?
I guess I would suggest to think about the premise if you're going into a developing world, repeating the content-focused aspects of American education, as opposed to a learning-centric or learning-how-to-learn mode. It seems to me that the most useful thing in developing world context might be to focus more on learning-how-to-learn, rather than having them try to acquire specific content. And so the same matter can be used to exercise the mind in ways of thinking, in ways of critical thinking, in ways of problem solving, rather than in a focus on understanding a given pedagogy. But I'm just personally skeptical of teaching pedagogy in the world you're talking about. I'm not skeptical at all of teaching other people to learn how to learn. Providing them a various exercise to demonstrate various aspects of learning.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to say, teach
teaching them how to learn about what?
No, I think it's a general skill. You just heard it. Choice learning is important, right? And the most, and I don't know about you, but the most important thing I learned in school is how to learn. I don't remember much about anything I learned in college, but I remember at some point in my middle of my college career, I decided that, hey, the purpose of this is to learn how to learn.
Yes, but before you respond to that, Roy, I'd like to ask a couple of other people, Muriel. I'm sorry, could you speak louder?
Sorry, I wasn't here in the presentation, but I followed the project, which I find very interesting, and I do agree with what you said just now, but I think that one thing doesn't exclude the other.
Right.
I think that it's possible to integrate in this kind of workflow an approach that encourages people to learn. And especially the kind of target group that you're aiming at, you're assuming that they already have some level of education, so they will be able to have a few skills. And I have been surprised working in consulting about that deep. That amongst teachers and people that are in secondary school, there is increasingly access to the internet. There are increasingly possibilities to find the kind of materials that you are producing, which you're trying to make available. The real challenge is, on the one hand, to do what you were saying, to make sure that the materials promote curiosity and promote inquisitiveness, but at the same time also to make sure that the people that can make best use of them really have access to them. And the internet is a vast place, and I'm not sure that even though it is available, it's not always so that people will be able to find it. So that is the challenge I'm sure that you're trying to address, is how do we get it to people? And I guess that is something that we can try to do.
Yeah, thank you so much. Any other reactions, Gil?
Just a comment. With this kind of material, usually the context is very low, and the teacher who will use this content has to build a context for his students with real life, and especially in the developing countries, you don't have as many contexts as you have schools and pupils. And if you don't say, and if you don't teach the teacher how to build this content, how to use, they won't use it. Because don't forget, especially in developed countries, the professors were not trained and the curriculum are not flexible. They are not trained to use such a material, and they don't know how to build a pedagogical context to make sure that the student will be interested in this kind of material, and they will get input and they will learn. So that's there is a dimension here, which is very important. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they will never use it.
No, I agree, but I should clarify that these materials are the way that being produced. Do not necessarily assume that they will be part of a school curriculum, and they're not necessarily supported by teachers. Teachers may use them for their own enrichment. There may be students of those teachers who will want to use those materials because they are interested in them, but any school curriculum that I know, those materials don't match those curricula. They're not school books. It's much more in the line of the previous presentation, pre-choice learning.
In fact, it would be very interesting to know who is using those materials.
Yeah.
Well, I can say a lot of Canadian students are using
it. It's a live developing country.
It's useful for their practice.
Yeah.
But
Moxon?
It's with the developing society.
We
report
only what the information we get from guidance from Sterling. Is it really that? I mean, because we should differentiate between what we casually hear from radio, from TV, from friends, or something like that, and what we do it, I mean, on purpose, to get a degree or something like that. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And we should know that I do it, I switch there, I'm a partner to open a university or something like that, and I switch the TV to get my degree, or just like that. And in both cases, I don't think that just science, learning science, or getting scientific mind. And so we are here just to discuss how to live scientific mind. So it's not just to know mathematics, physics, chemistry, I live scientific mind. So I think we should be more precise. I'm afraid that casual learning or just information, we should achieve it in just getting information and learning. Then this is self-learning. I want to learn. I seek for learning. But just to do anything, just like this, learning, reading a book is learning, I don't.
Yeah. Okay, one last comment perhaps.
Could I just respond to that?
Before you respond, just one last comment from the audience and then a brief response on your part.
Sarah. Yesterday I had a feeling that most of the people did not identify with the name of the possible. Everybody's like, well, what's the scientific mind? Like, you know what I mean?
No. I don't.
Yeah, we had a conversation yesterday in the table and we thought that maybe it was fitting with another person.
Is this the concept you want to discuss right now?
I don't think so. I don't think it's related actually to the matter and the discussion. So perhaps I should ask Roy to briefly respond, and obviously there is opportunity during the coffee break to follow up individually. Roy?
Well, I was thinking also two other groups of people, not those who have had access to schools or have had a good school background locally, but people who are outside the school system, young people who are outside the school system, or people later in life who are a long way from the school system but want to learn about science and they're prepared to do it themselves. And I've tried to make what I've written so far attractive to them by relating everything to everyday operations. I think that's very essential, that you must express yourself in terms of, you know, lifting weights and whether you get tired and how much work you have to do and things like that.
Okay, well,
down to earth,
and onwards to the next group. We have to be brief, sorry. thank you. Do you want to say something?
I dare not.
Sorry.